Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Eric Patin, and he'll be answering your most important questions on effective nymphing techniques for streams and rivers. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you would like to ask Eric a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there right below his section and send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. The broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. If you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Eric Patin about effective nymphing techniques. Get ready to visit the International Sportsman's Exposition nearest you, Northern California, Denver, Phoenix, or Salt Lake City. Each ISE spotlights 400 to 600 plus exhibitors, including fly shops and hundreds of lodges, guides, and outfitters from across the West, Canada, Alaska, and even South America. Watch ISE's Best of the West Distance Casting Contest. Learn from the best local fly tiers at your how-to center and fly tying video theater. Meet fly fishing legends and next generation stars at ISE's Fishing Theater. Clouser, Dennis, Rickards, Blanton, O'Keefe, Gunn, Patin, Dorsey, dozens more. Watch film premieres of Soulfish by Mikey Weir and Equilibrium by Dr. Grant Wistwell. Schedules and info online right now at sportsexpos.com. That's www.sportsexpos.com. Well, before we introduce Eric, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. On our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and also a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have 2 chances to win tonight for our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet, go to our homepage right there below Eric's section. You'll find a link that says click here to register for our drawing. Just click on that link, fill out the form, and submit it, and then you'll be included in the drawing for those 2 prizes tonight. We'll also be giving away $20 gift certificate compliments of Front Range Anglers in Boulder, Colorado. Here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something we talked about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and your location using the text box on the homepage, the same text box that you use to enter questions during the show. So at the end of the show, pay attention during the show, and at the end we'll ask a question, and we'll let Eric decide whether or not you've got the right answer. First answer, right answer in wins. Our guest tonight is Eric Patin. Eric has been fly fishing for 55 years and fly tying for more than 42 years. He's guided and hosted fly fishing trips from the North Platte in Wyoming to New Zealand, including British Columbia, the United Kingdom, and Chile. Eric has spent most of his life and money on fishing, but he has also found time to give back to the industry by teaching others about fly fishing. He has lectured and demonstrated fly tying for the International Sportsman's Exposition for 23 years and the Federation of Fly Fishers Conclave for 31 years. He's a member of Joan Whitlock Speakers Bureau and was a member of the Chevy Trucks Pro Team of Outdoor Personalities, which involved doing 6 videos, 2 television fly fishing ads, and 5 hard copy ads for all the major outdoor magazines. He's also written biweekly column on fly fishing for the Coloradoan for over 4 years, contributed articles to all the major fly fishing magazines, and authored 2 books, the North Platte River Journal and River Wrecks. Eric, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Well, thank you, Roger. It's fun to be here.
Oh, it's always fun to be here. It's always fun
Absolutely.
To talk about fly fishing.
I never get tired.
What else is there to talk about, huh? Well, tonight, Eric has offered to give us all his secrets on nymphing and streams and rivers, and he's quite the expert at that. Obviously, as you've already heard, he's got quite a few years on that. So either
next season will be my 61st year of fly fishing. It's kind of hard to believe that I'm still at it, but I am. The thing that most amazes me is that after so many years on the river that I'm not a lot better than I am.
Those fish can always beat us, can't they?
Absolutely they can. That's part of the charm of fly fishing and nymph fishing or any other kind of fishing. But
sure,
as an introduction to the nymph fishing bit, I would preface it by saying that there are three really important things to keep in mind. One would be that there is no wrong way to nymph fish or any other kind of fishing. I mean, it's not the sort of thing that can be exactly right or exactly wrong. I think secondarily, if you're going to be a good nymph fisherman, I would encourage you to start thinking about what the fly is doing and not so much about what your indicator and line is doing, though those are important as well. And last but not least, that all of God's creatures are created equal. And so if you can think like the fish, and it's not as hard as you would think, you increase your chances of being successful.
Well, good. And we're going to dig into all of those things rather deeply tonight. But first, let's get a little bit about your background. How did you first get introduced to fishing, to fly fishing, and how did you begin to learn?
Well, I grew up in northern New Mexico, and I can literally remember fishing and fly fishing before I can remember my mom and dad, which I think maybe says something about where my mind was. But, you know, I have a picture of myself when I was probably 4 or 5 sitting on a bridge sucking my thumb with the fly rod and my line dangling under the bridge, and I kind of remember that. I just did it all my life. Interestingly enough, my family and my dad and 9 uncles who all fished. We fished worms when the water was dirty. We fished small spinners when the water was kind of murky and starting to clear. And then when the water was clear, we fished flies. But we fished all of those things with a fly rod. We fished worms, no other bait, but with 2 worms with a split shot between. And if there was ever a perfect training for a nymph fisherman, it was probably that. But that's just exactly how I learned to fish. And I carried that through the times when I began to fish exclusively with flies. At the time, there was very little literature. I don't remember. Of course, there were books, but I didn't know any of them, and there certainly weren't very many on techniques. And so, you know, it was the sort of thing where you kind of learned on your own, and you kind of built on the things that seemed to work for you. And that's basically how I learned to do it.
Just hit and miss and trial and error.
Get on the river. Yeah. Give it a try. See what happened. Keep the good things. Throw the bad things away.
I think you said your father had gotten you started, though, in fishing, but you soon surpassed him.
He always said that he had created a monster when he taught me to fish, but I'm sure that by the time I was 8 or 9, I had passed him up. I was for sure better than he was by the time I was 10. On the other hand, I spent a lot more time thinking about it, too.
Yeah, he was busy working while you were fishing.
You got that right.
did you have any other mentors during your childhood or teenage years?
Well, I would say that there was an old barber in town, and to tell you the truth, he was the first person I ever saw tie a fly. He didn't teach me to tie flies. It was years later that I did that. But I saw him tie a fly, and I just knew that someday that was something I wanted to learn how to do. It just seemed like magic to me, putting all that stuff on those little hooks and then fooling a big old trout with a fly you tied yourself. That seemed to me just the epitome of the best thing in the whole world. And when I got to the University of Colorado, where I went to college and played ball, there was a shop there that was run by an old gentleman by the name of Hank Roberts.
I remember Hank Roberts.
Yep, this gentleman was the first one of the big names in fly fishing, and he was maybe the first man to make $1 million selling trout flies. He had a big operation, and I used to stop into his shop all the time when I'd be coming home from school. The tenement that I lived in was on the other side of his fly shop, and I'd stop in there, and one day he asked me, he said, "Hey, kid." He says, "Are you a shoplifter or what? You come in here every day, but you never buy anything." And I told him, "Well, Mr. Roberts, I don't have any money right now, but someday I'm going to buy some stuff and learn to tie flies." Well, it took me another 2 weeks to have enough nerve to walk in there again. But when I walked in, he said again, "Hey, kid," he said, "go up those stairs there and talk to Gracie." Well, Gracie was a Native American lady that tied his most delicate and beautiful patterns, and he had set up a little fly tying kit for me, and she gave me my first lesson, and I never stopped tying after that.
That's interesting. You know, one of the first places I bought fly tying materials with was Hank Roberts in Boulder.
That's where it was, but
yeah.
You know, he was a gruff old guy, but he had a good heart.
Yeah. I remember riding my bike there.
I'll never forget seeing him in pictures and waders because he always wore a white shirt and tie. When he was fishing, when he was working, white shirt and tie.
I'll be darned. Okay, well let's dive in here.
Okay.
We've got to talk about equipment first, and we've got. These are just kind of general things on how you might get set up. But we've got a question from Scott Nelson in Portland, Oregon. He says, after reading the book, Masters of the Nymph, I dedicated the summer of 1979 to fish with only nymphs while living in Ketchum, Idaho. I've been a nymph fisherman for the most part ever since. There's been a lot of controversy over the years about what type of rods, tackle, knots, leaders, and rigging to use for nymph fishing. So what are your thoughts? And let's stick to the rod. Rods and tackle and line for right now, because we're going to get into that terminal tackle here more directly. So,
well, I like a rod that's for general nymph fishing 9 or 9.5 feet. Now, what I'm talking about is if you have one set up, I'd like a rod that's 9 or 9.5 feet, and I want it to be either medium fast or a fast action rod. Now, the reason for that is that I want a little bit stiffer rod. You're going to be lifting against some line in the water. Your leader is underwater, and so there's going to be resistance there. And a soft dry fly rod is going to make you miss a lot of strikes. Reels, I don't care about with trout fishing. In fact, if you feel like it, just put your line in your pocket and work with it that way. So any reel works. I like blood knots because that's what I learned to tie first, and I can actually tie those as fast as I can tie an improved surgeon's. Either one is fine. With the improved surgeon's, your line comes off at a little bit of an angle. I don't know that matters a whit. I use improved clinched knots for my knots to the fly, again, only because I learned to tie those quickest and best. And when I'm guiding, sometimes you're trying to drift your boat and tie at the same time for your clients. And so I need the knots that I can do the fastest and the quickest. I use a Duncan loop occasionally, but not very often. I think it's a good knot. There's tons of good knots out there, as a matter of fact. I like to overline my rods. I think modern graphite, it's pretty forgiving that way, but I get the feeling often that most graphite, and especially stiff graphite, you know, you can put five, call it a 5 weight, even if it'll cast a 6 or 7 weight line better. And because most of our casting for especially nymph fishing is short, I may use a 5 weight with a 6 or a 7 weight forward line. So I just commonly go right to that.
That's, you know, I've talked to other people that are fond of over, you know, weighting their line for the rod. And cast a little, I tried that out, just testing it in the backyard and it is, you know, when you got that heavier line, it casts out a little bit farther and a little bit easier. So,
yeah, it does cast better. And I, you know, it always amazes me. You go to the sports shows or the shops, and you see people out in front tearing their underwear trying to throw 90 feet of fly line. The problem is you don't ever fish at that range. You know, most of your fishing is at actually at 20 or 30 feet. And the question is not, will some of these rods throw 90 feet of line? The question is, will they effectively throw 20 or 30 feet of line, which is your fishing distance, and the truth is a lot of them won't.
Yeah, especially with the weight and the weighted flies and all that on there too. So we'll talk more about that. What about lines in general? We've got a question here from Cy Algus in Rockville Center, New York. He asks, what about selection of floating medium or sinking lines? Do they play any part in nymphing?
To my way of thinking, they actually don't. If you're fishing lakes, I do use sinking lines then, but in rivers and streams, I never use any sort of a sinking line, and I don't really think that they have much of an application there, and it has everything to do with the fact that the diameter of the fly line gives you so much water resistance that it makes it really, really tough to control those lines. For streamer fishing, I do use them, but not for nymph fishing.
Okay.
So I'd say they don't have an application in my mind.
So you mainly use floating lines for nymphing?
I not only use floating lines for nymphing, but I am more interested in a line that floats high for nymph fishing than I am for dry fly fishing. It is really important for me when I'm nymph fishing to have that line, at least at the tip, floating high and dry.
Okay. Because that's helping you to judge your takes and so forth? Is that?
Exactly.
Is that? Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, we've got Paige Olson, River Falls, Wisconsin, says, I'm a beginner, so when is nymphing most effective? Is it a time of day or time of the season or all the time?
I think it's effective all the time, whether it be winter or summer. Or, you know, the fish during the winter are more lethargic, but then again, so are you, so it's kind of evens everything out. But they need to eat all year long, and if they're feeding on dry flies, you can be darn sure that they're taking, you know, 9 or 10 nymphs for every one dry fly they're taking. And so if they're feeding, the chances are pretty good they're feeding on nymphs. There is a phenomenon called invertebrate drift, and it has to do with the fact that when insects hatch off, aquatic insects hatch, they tend to fly upstream. So if one thinks about it, it might happen that all of the insects would end up at the top of the headwaters and none down below, except for the fact that even though these insects, if you watch them, they hatch and do fly upstream and lay eggs and reproduce and do the things they do, they have found that aquatic nymphs, usually at night, will let themselves go from wherever they're perched and drift downstream. And so probably they're most vulnerable to the fish at that point. But I'm not much of a night fisherman, and there seems to be times of the day where the fish will feed pretty heavily, and so they can be very effective anytime. I don't think it matters much.
Okay, okay. In fact, probably you'd have more of a chance nymphing than you would dry fly fishing as a general rule.
As a general rule, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we have another kind of, I would call this somewhat of a beginner's question. Bob Todd in Ohio says he fishes with dry flies in West Virginia 99% of the time. So he's probably an excellent dry fly fisherman. But he says he wants to try a nymph every so often, but hasn't had any luck. And what one thing can he do to change this? Is there a general, I don't know how to say it, but a philosophy or a mode of operation that's different from
absolutely.
Dry fly fishing?
Absolutely, Bob.
Okay.
Yeah, Bob, what you need to do is leave your dry flies at home. That's the way you're going to learn to fish that nymph. My other question to you, Bob, would be if you can catch a fish on a dry fly, why in the world would you use a nymph? I use nymphs for probably 10 months of the year. I live in Colorado, and that's of necessity because we only have about 2 months a year, sometimes 3 months, where we can effectively dry fly fish. And so the rest of the time, you really do need to think about a nymph if you hope to catch fish. But at the same time, I would far rather catch a fish on a dry fly than I would on a nymph. So if I felt that I had the chance to take one on a dry fly, I wouldn't be fishing the nymph. But truly, you know, it sounds facetious, but it's not. The only way you're going to be successful with a nymph is to just plain leave the dry flies at home so that you have no choice but to fish the nymphs, and then you'll learn how.
Yeah, yeah, just a lot of practice and trying to learn.
You got to have some success at it before you believe in it.
Yeah, good, good. Excellent answer, excellent answer. Well, let's talk about the three areas we promised folks to talk about. We got some of the general questions out of the way. And we're going to talk about fishing water that is 1 to 3 feet deep first. Then we'll move on and we'll talk about water that's 3 to 4 feet deep. And then we'll talk about over 4 feet deep, some real deep runs, and kind of attack each one of these separately here.
Okay, let's do that.
Yeah, so I think maybe a place to start is talking about the terminal tackle. If we're walking up to a stream here and we're seeing that we've got 1 to 3 feet of water here, how do you rig up your terminal tackle to begin with? Because I'm sure that sets the stage for everything else.
Yeah, it does, and I like a standard 9-foot tapered leader. I usually will fish multiple flies, usually two. Sometimes I can be tempted to more, though that's a fish rig, because the more flies you put on there, the more it's going to get tangled up when you do catch a fish, and you invite more tangles generally. But I'll normally fish a two-fly rig. the main thing that I'm interested in when I'm fishing that way is to make sure that that leader is absolutely arrow straight with no kinks in it. If you're fishing something that looks like a slinky, I guarantee you that you're going to get strikes that you just cannot detect. So the most important part of my terminal rig is to make sure that everything is very, very straight, so that I have a straight shot from those flies back to my line and to my rod. It gives me great feel. And then it's a matter of fishing this rig. I don't do anything fancy.
Well, Eric, before we go away from there, is there any tricks you have for straightening your tippet and leader?
Well, I don't like using a piece of rubber. It'll straighten your leader, but it also weakens it. It changes the molecular structure, the heat does. And I sometimes, if I know I'm going to be nymph fishing the next day, I will actually hang my reel off a curtain rod if I'm indoors someplace. Not the very end of your tippet, because you're going to stretch it then, but I'll hang it by the reel, and that'll pull it just straight as an arrow. But if you just take your leader in your hands and pull it by sections, maybe 2 feet at a time, you can get that very, very straight. And that is absolutely important. You take it out of the package, and like I say, if you just leave it that way, it's kind of like a slinky. As you start to fish it, those coils open up, but that still makes it real tough to detect subtle strikes.
One technique I had heard about, and I've tried it a few times, seems to work, is to take your leader, stretch it between your hands, and then kind of grab it with your lips or your teeth and kind of spring it like a bowstring kind of thing. And
I think that would work. I mean, you know, like I say, you don't want to weaken the structure. So once you get down to the tip, especially if you're using something fairly fragile, like anything 5X above or smaller, I think is, you need to be real careful about pulling on that, because part of its strength comes from its ability to stretch, and you don't want to take that stretch out of it.
Right, right. Now, do you use fluorocarbon at all, or do you use just mono?
I use fluorocarbon for my terminal tackle. When it first came out and I looked at it, and it had more to do with the price than anything, I thought, this is just ridiculous. They're never going to be able to sell that. I work at St. Peter's Fly Shop part of the time, and the amount of that we sell is unbelievable. I think it matters. I do think it matters. There's good anglers that think it doesn't matter, and they still catch a lot of fish. But I like for my terminal tackle, I like fluorocarbon. My main leader usually is not. I usually don't fish fluorocarbon leaders. But I do use fluorocarbon tippet all the time, exclusively.
Okay. Eric, we need to take a little break here, and we'll be back in just a few minutes, okay?
Great.
It's the AFTA Consumer Fly Fishing Show, January 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Colorado Convention Center in Denver. Pre-register at www.theflyfishingexpo.com and save 20%. Don't miss the best fly fishing show of the year. Come see the latest and greatest rods, reels, fly lines, waders, gear, flies, new clothing for 2008, and great seminars on the fly fishing by industry experts. Over 100 manufacturers will be there. Meet the USA fly fishing team and collect autographs. And Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and kids under 10 all get in free when they're accompanied by an adult. So visit www.theflyfishingexpo.com to pre-register today and save 20%. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Eric Patin about fishing effective nymph patterns in different types of waters. And if you'd like to ask Eric a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box there and ask a question, and we'll try to answer as many of them on the show as possible. And I really encourage you folks to do this. It's a great chance for you. I will tell you that as these questions come in, I will kind of put them in the spot where I think they're most effective. So just to let you know that it might not get answered right away. Now, one of the questions that came in here, Eric, is they said how Scott Nelson, Portland, Oregon, how long of leaders? I think you said 9 foot, didn't you?
I think that's a standard leader. Sometimes for deeper water, I'll use a longer leader. I might go up to 12 feet if I think I need more leader to get down to where the fish are. But I'll usually use a 9-foot leader, and I seldom have to vary that.
Okay, okay. Well, before we get into more questions here, Eric, tell us a bit about what you're doing in the fly fishing world right now, what you're involved with, and if you'd share that with us, please.
Well, I am working with the International Sportsman's Expositions. I'm doing seminars and fly tying demonstrations at the Denver show, so that's coming up next month. I'm working on another book of fishing stories, which I'm getting close to the end, and I have a publisher that's interested in it. So hopefully that will be out sometime in the next year. Usually there's a pretty long lag between finishing a book and getting it published, unless you're a pretty famous author, which I'm not. I also guide part-time and work part-time with St. Peter's Fly Shop here in town. But I also do programs on seminars on the North Platte River and time demonstrations for some of the area fly shops. So I'll be down at Charlie's Fly Box in March, and I just finished a program in Boulder.
Oh, great.
So,
great. Yeah.
Yeah, those are some of the things I'm working with. I also design trout flies for Umpqua Feather Merchants.
Oh, I didn't know that. Great. Are there any special flies you have there right now that would make sense to talk about tonight?
Well, two that are coming out right now. One is a midge pattern that's called Eric's Midge. The other one is one of my very favorite nymph patterns, which is a soft hackle, as a matter of fact, which is a tungsten and orange soft hackle. And
what's that one called?
It's called a tungsten and orange.
Oh, okay. Okay,
and
so
it's a variant of the, you know, the ancient fly pattern, the partridge in orange, with
right.
a couple of little different wrinkles to it.
Yeah, it seems like people are coming back to those soft hackle patterns.
Oh, they are. They're very, very effective patterns. And even though they're, you know, more than a century old, they're just very, very effective. And I think they're pretty aesthetic patterns. I like them a lot, and I enjoy fishing them.
Well, let's talk more at the end about flies. I want to stick now with the nymphing part of this, and then we'll come back and maybe we'll talk about flies a little bit at the end a bit more. Okay, now we have a couple of questions here came in, quite a few actually, that all have to do with weight. And let me just check here online, just checking the questions that are coming in here online.
Yeah, weight's always a question. How to weight, where to weight.
Yeah. We do have one
whether
come
or not
in here.
To weight.
Yeah. Ken Calhoun, Gilmer, Texas. This is going back to what we were talking about, so I'll take this one right now. What about leather leader straighteners? What do you think about those?
Yeah, well, they do the same thing that rubber does, and that's that they straighten the leader by heat friction, which changes the molecular makeup of that, either the fluorocarbon or the monofilament. And you can do that. It probably doesn't matter a lot, you know, at the butt section of your leader where you probably have 15 or so pounds of breaking strength. Reducing that a little bit makes no difference. But you want to not use that stuff when you get down toward your tippet because that will weaken it and it may be significant.
Yeah,
so
okay.
It does work, but I prefer not to do that. And especially with the tippet, it's easy to just give it a little bit of a stretch and straighten it that way.
Right.
So use it on the heavy part of your leader if you want. That's an effective way to straighten that out. But don't use it on your terminal tackle on your tippet.
Okay. So a couple questions. Ron Smith in Pennsylvania, Ken Calhoun in Gilmer, Texas, both ask, do you prefer weight? Ron asks, do you prefer to weight your nymphs or weight your tippet, and why?
Well, I prefer the weight in the nymphs. Sometimes I'd like, if I can get away with that with all the weight that I need and I can get my flies down, I won't use then any sort of additional weight on the line. And the reason I do that is that it makes it far easier to cast. Every time you put more weight somewhere in that system, you create another hinge. And it makes it, number one, it makes it difficult to cast, and number two, it makes it more likely that you're going to get tangled up. sometimes I'll fish a heavier nymph on the end of the leader, and then I will drop off a nymph off of that weighted nymph that is not weighted, which in my mind makes it float just a little bit more free and maybe more natural. So in other words, I'm using the heavier nymph maybe as the weight, and the thought occurs to me sometimes, why put a split shot on your line if you can put another nymph on there that serves the same purpose and creates the possibility that you might actually get a strike on that heavier, bigger nymph. Something else to think about. You know, with the advent of the beadhead flies, there's only two reasons they could possibly be more effective than any other pattern, and it has to do with either the weight that gets the fly down to the bottom of the river, or that little bead is an attractant to the fish. If that bead indeed is an attractor, and I think it is, then think about a split shot on your line that's shiny. There is no question in my mind that there's times when the fish will pick up that split shot. And so I carry my split shot in my container. I put sand, which takes all of the shine off that split shot. I don't want any shine on it because, like I say, I think that fish occasionally will actually take that split shot. So you don't want anything shiny on that line that doesn't have a hook in it.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, on our last show, we were talking to John Barr, and that's basically the philosophy he uses. He puts a big, heavy, weighted nymph on the top and then, you know, floats a trailer off the back of that.
Yes.
And does not use any split shot, you know, because of the same reasons you just said, you know, another hinge point, another place to get tangled. Why not put it into the fly? So,
right. And I like that better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's, we'll probably talk more about maybe different weighting techniques or whatever as we get into deeper water here. But let's dig in here. Ken Calhoun in Gilmer, Texas. And this will break the ice on this one. Do you use strike indicators when fishing fast water? If you do, do you use yarn or do you use a second fly as the indicator? And if you don't, how do you detect strikes? So he's asked a lot here, but maybe you can just kind of dive in there, Eric.
Okay. First of all, if I'm fishing fast water, again, it depends on how deep it is. But when you get fast water, you get riffly water. And the more riffly the water is, the closer you can get to the fish. The fish don't want to be seen, but if the water above them is broken, so the things can't see them in the water very easily. Now, the only natural the natural enemy of a trout is a bird of prey from above. So there's other enemies they may have in the water, but it's birds of prey that they are concerned with. Now, if the water's broken above them, they don't mind holding in fairly shallow water. And you can take advantage of that because you can approach them very closely. So when I'm casting the fish like that, it's easy for me to see. Now, again, I often will grease. I'll use a fly floating to grease about the last foot of my fly line and about the first foot or so of my butt section of my leader. I want them to float very high so that I can see them. If if the cast is really short, sometimes part of the leader will actually be out of the water. So I want to maintain contact. I think that in quick water like that, it's having a clean drift or a drift that's right with the current is not nearly so important. The fish then have to make a quick decision about whether or not they're going to take food. It's going past them rather quickly. So you should be close enough that you can see your leader. Now, if you have trouble with that, take some nail polish, colorful nail polish, red, whatever, and put a couple of dabs on your leader at certain spots, and that'll help you start to see your leader. And once you can see your leader, it becomes more apparent to you. If you want, in that kind of water, if I'm going to use a strike indicator, I'll use a little bit of a polypropylene. I just carry a piece of ribbon with me, and I just take a little piece of it off and with a loop, put that into my system someplace so I can see that. And it's easy enough to do. But I don't want big bozo on there, you know, a 2-inch yarn indicator. I think it's unnecessary and is distracting.
So when we're talking, and which we are right now about the shallower water, just to kind of summarize there, you said, you know, if you've got ripply water there, riffles. You can get closer, so you should be able to not have to put out that much line to where you maybe need an indicator as well, right?
The closer, the better. There's times in really fast, shallow water where I maybe have 2 or 3 feet of my fly line out of the a tip top. I mean, I'm fishing very short. And, you know, at the end, Ken says, I suspect that I have missed strikes because I'm not detecting them. And that brings up the conundrum of the angler with a sixth sense. You know, you get knowledgeable fly fishermen get together and you always hear about, well, this guy has a sixth sense about that. Well, I don't believe in the sixth sense. I do believe that sometimes you do something so often and so long that you get to the point where it's almost second nature to you, and you start to, I think you start to see things that consciously you're not even aware of, but that tell you that you are getting a strike, and it has to do with just doing something for a long time. But, you know, it's kind of interesting. Well, you know, how do you know that you miss strikes? Well, you don't know. And how do you know that somebody else detects strikes that you couldn't detect? Well, you can't know that either, obviously. There's no way to prove that happened. But as a matter of fact, I think everybody misses many strikes. You just don't see them. They're very subtle. And it really partly comes back to don't be thinking about your line and your indicator exclusively. I like to picture what my nymphs look like under the water and what they're doing. I like my weight touching the bottom, or my heaviest nymph touching the bottom once in a while. Well, if that's happening, then is my dropper below or further downstream than the heavier fly? And if that's the case, do fish take that fly and I not see that strike? Maybe. And if I think that's happening, maybe I adjust my line a little bit. Maybe I give it a little downstream pull to make sure that point fly is above the weight so that I can see what's happening. So try to think about what's happening with your nymphs. And, it comes to pass that at some point you really in your mind visualize what's going on down underneath the water. It's not a mystery world down there, and you need to think down where your flies are, not up where your indicator and line is all the time.
Well, one of the questions here we have is from Dino Myers in Marysville, Washington. He says, how long does it take to get the feel of no indicator if you've always used them? And that, you know, just to extend that as well, when you're talking about fishing the shallower water without an indicator, what are you using to sense the strike? Are you using the fly line, the leader, or
the feel? I'm using it all, and that's
okay.
That's why I don't like the indicator for all of your nymphing use, because without the indicator, I'm watching my line, I'm watching my leader, I'm seeing things in the water. I'm not being distracted by that one thing. I get you put that indicator on and you get tunnel vision. You don't see anything happening anywhere around that indicator. When I'm guiding sometimes, it amazes me. My anglers are so focused in on those strike indicators that they don't see all sorts of other things that are happening that would tell them that they just had a strike, even though the indicator didn't show it to them. I think that just like the old mountain men, they didn't look into the fire because it ruined their night vision. They always looked away from the fire. It's the same exact thing. The indicator becomes the fire that kind of blinds you to everything else that's going on in the river, where it be that you actually see a fish take a nymph. Sometimes you do see that. But I think when you're not using that indicator all the time, you start to see many, many, many more things that tell you that you're getting a strike or what's happening in the water that's useful to you.
So maybe the answer to Bino's question, too, is how long does it take to get the feel? It's maybe the same answer you gave to the dry fly fisherman, which was leave the indicator off and work with it for a while. Right.
Work with it for a while, and I think you'll find that very, 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 very quickly you'll pick it up. It's really not a mystery, but you start to see many more things. And there are things that you need to see to really get to that next level with your nymph fishing.
Okay. And here's another question from Rick Pasek in Vancouver, BC, Canada. When fishing with nymphs in small rivers, I usually allow my fly to bump the bottom, which you were just talking about, to get the fly to the zone where the fish are. Is it more effective to allow the fly to bump the bottom, or should I be using less weight or an indicator to have the fly just above the bottom?
Most important, Rick, would be to, you want to touch the bottom once in a while, but you don't want to be dragging the bottom all of the time. If I can feel the heaviest fly or the weight touch the bottom once or twice on a drift, I'm happy with that. It's plenty. But if I'm just dragging on the bottom and that weight is bumping the bottom 5 or 6 or 10 times during a normal drift, to me that's too much. I want to be just a little bit off the bottom. In an ideal world, there would be a way to do that. And actually, sometimes you can suspend nymphs off of an indicator of some sort, and you can fish it just off the bottom that way. But it's almost impossible because of the variation in the bottom of the river. And so next best, or probably in this case best, is that you feel that weight just once in a while, just kissing the bottom as it runs along. And that's, to me, ideal. That's exactly where I want my nymphs to be drifting and fishing.
Okay, sounds good. I do have a question came in on the Internet from John French in Southern California. He asked if there's a method to calculate the tippet size. I guess what size tippet to use with what flies is what he's asking. But he also asked how far above the nymph should the weight be attached to the tippet. So if you do find yourself, let's say you've got some flies that are not weighted and you do have to put weight on, where do you put your weight?
I myself like my weight above the flies. You can put, I sometimes, if I'm not satisfied that I'm getting down doing that. So, in other words, I have my main weight above the flies on the leader, and I am touching the bottom, but I have a feeling that those flies are maybe riding up a little higher than I want them to. I'll use a micro shot between the two flies, and it's something. Usually it'll be something, literally a micro shot, something really small that I can put in there that gives me just that little tiny bit of extra weight so that I know those nymphs are getting down where I want them to be. But usually, you know, gosh, some people like their weight between the two flies. There's others that like the weight at the bottom to get deep, and then the flies will be above that. I like my weight at the top and then the tippet off of that. And so very often I'll use the knot that I use to put on the tippet, my tippet. That knot's a great place to put a split so that it doesn't start sliding up and down your terminal tackle.
Okay. Now, I got a couple more questions here on the Internet. Both of them are very similar. John in South Carolina, Ted in Newington, Connecticut. They both are asking how a beginner learns to nymph. Can one learn nymphing techniques from a book or videos, or should you seek out a local expert guide and pay for a day of guiding and teaching? What would you recommend?
I think a rank beginner here. Okay, a rank beginner, you can't go wrong by hiring a guide to take you out on the water that you're going to be fishing. I will always put my money on the local guy who knows his water and can catch fish on it. He's going to teach you so much. And what you want to do is don't pretend like you know more than you do. After 60 years of fly fishing, if I go out with a guide, which occasionally for a variety of reasons I will do, I pretend like I'm the most ignorant fly fisherman on the whole planet, which I may well be. But I want to learn what he knows, and I want to pay attention to what he's teaching me, and I'll tell you that even after all this time, I can't go out with a good fisherman and not learn something from him, whether it be friends of mine that I fish with or whatnot. I always learn something from him that I didn't know before, that I can, you might say, put in my armamentarium of habits and things that I can pull out when the fishing gets tough and I just can't catch fish. But that's a great way to learn. I have a little bit of a prejudice about the fact that we have so much information anymore on how to nymph fish that everybody seems to do it exactly the same way. when you get good at nymph fishing, you're going to have techniques that are just yours. And the way you've come to that is you've picked a little bit of this, you've picked a little bit of that, and you found the things that work for you. And you develop confidence in those things. And once you develop that confidence, you're going to catch fish. And at times you're going to catch a lot of fish. So, you know, don't take anything for gospel. It's not that way. Fly fishing is not that way. Fly fishing to me is meant to be like a folk song. You need to change it. When you sing that folk song, it's got to be changed just a little bit to make it yours. And that's the way it's supposed to be. And so there's nobody out there, believe me, that can give you gospel on any kind of fishing. It should be yours. And once you make it that way, just learn from a lot of sources. But don't get hooked up on one.
And don't keep doing the same old thing if it's not working either.
Well, yeah, that's for sure.
You know, I mean, well, I found myself doing that. You know, I'll be fishing there for, 20 minutes. Half an hour, and I'm going, well, I'm not getting anything. Well, you're doing the same thing you were doing half an hour ago. Do something different, you know.
I'm a very, very impatient angler.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not particularly analytical, but I do learn things kind of by rote, and at the same time, I am not at all a patient angler. I'm looking for the players, and I don't give them a lot of chances. I'm covering a lot of river when I'm fishing.
Well, Eric, another time to take a break here, so we'll be right back.
Great.
The Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida, the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and helped with the Striped Bass Game Fish 2006 Symposium in Foxborough, Massachusetts last year, just to name a few. The Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts, and to continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that has always given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. For more information, go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Well, you're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Eric Patine about fishing nymphs in streams and rivers. And if you'd like to ask Eric a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box there to send us your question. And we'll try to answer as many of the questions on our show tonight. And we're getting a lot in. I'm getting a lot here, Eric, over the internet, and I don't
Great.
Know. A lot of them are coming in, and just so you folks know, I'm getting these. They're coming in on fly questions, so it looks like we're going to spend a little bit of time with that.
Okay.
One just came in now. This is from somebody I know is a listener a lot. He's Phil Panko in Kaysen, Minnesota, and he wants to know, any tactics you use to control tangles for multiple fly rigs. He says, I enjoy using two or three flies in the winter, and I've tried to lob cast and traditional forward and back casting and have tangles around each other. Is there any tips you can give for that?
About the only thing I can tell you is, as I tell folks, if you don't like untying knots, you're going to hate fly fishing. And if one thinks that there will come a time in your life where you'll be so good you don't tangle your rig, it ain't going to happen, so forget about that part. If I am fishing more than two flies, if I start fishing something like a three-fly rig, I like to really open my cast up, and that helps me probably the most. Either that or use a bit of a circle cast, and the way you do that is to bend your rod over to about a 45-degree angle and actually just make a circle with the rod as far as casting it. And by doing that, you don't bring the flies close to the line where they can tangle with each other or with the main line. So you might try that, but it's very difficult not to get tangles. And once you catch a fish with a rig like that, it's going to be rare that you don't tangle up. Last but not least, when you're using those multiple fly rigs, you want to be real careful releasing your trout, because I get hooked all the time There's no more hopeless feeling than when you get hooked and the fish gets away from you, and now he's attached to you by the hook. And so you want to be careful with that. But just opening up your cast a bunch helps a lot. And that, I can't give you much more advice than that. I get tangled all the time when I'm fishing those rigs.
Yeah, I always wondered about when I've been out with guides, and I go, you know, being a guide is more about tying knots and untangling them than anything else. It's like,
oh, my God, you wouldn't believe. I could tell you about a trip where I went through an entire spool of brand-new 4X fluorocarbon in one trip. I mean, from the beginning to end, used the whole thing. Had to break out a new one. I mean, that was a lot of knots.
Yeah, that's for sure.
But well, you know, the other thing, too, is the only difference is the expert knows when to cut it all off and start over instead of trying to untangle it. That's the only difference.
That's true. Terry Mitchell in New Zealand asks the question, and he says, I often encounter conditions where I can see the fish okay, but that's and occasionally I see a flash of white as the trout open its mouth, but more often than not I can't see much at all. Other than using strike indicators, do you have any tips on using nymphs in poor light or when visibility is bad?
Terry, you come from a beautiful land, and I love the Kiwis. Those folks are great down there. But you know, when you're fishing in that, the light that gets me the worst is just before it gets dark, that the water goes that dead gray color, and when it does that, it's really, really hard to see anything. And I think that is exactly when I would use an indicator. You just can't see enough to be able to detect a strike of any kind. And like I say, I don't think there's a better way to do it than with an indicator when the light is like that.
Okay. Question from Jason, Mountain Home, Arkansas. How do you alter the type or depth of your strike indicator, if you're using one, based on the depth and speed of the water you fish?
Mountain Home is a beautiful little town, Jason. You come from a great place. And I've had some wonderful time fishing down there in the White and the Norfolk Rivers. I think that what you're talking about, I don't very often adjust my indicator. I usually can judge where I want to put it in deference to how deep the water is. But I think one of the things that we're very lazy about as anglers is adjusting our weight to the depth of the water and the speed of the water. I think if you're not changing that weight often, what's happening is that you're working your way up through a run, and there's places where you're going to have the ideal amount of weight. There's going to be many more places where you have too much weight or not enough weight. And if you're not adjusting that weight pretty often, I think that your fishing is probably not going to be as effective. So it's worth taking the time to put on a little more weight, take off a little weight as you feel the need to. I have for years used split shots with those little wings that make it easy to take them off until I used them for 30 or 40 years effectively and never had a problem. And then somebody told me that those little wings make your line rotate in the air like little propellers, and then you get tangled, and I'll be darned, since then I'm always getting tangled up because of it. Never happened before they told me that. But at the same time, it makes it easy to get that weight on and off.
Yeah.
In the olden days, I used to carry split shot in my mouth. That probably explains a lot about my personality to folks. I don't do that anymore. It's probably not a great idea to bite it with your teeth,
especially
have it in
you
your mouth that way.
Especially you being a dentist, right?
Especially being a dentist.
You don't want
I tell
your
people,
patient.
Do as I tell you, not as I do.
Yeah, exactly. What about that new Mojo Mud? Have you tried that out, that soft putty?
I have tried
that,
and it is pretty effective.
Yeah, I kind of like that because you can pull it off and you can make it real thin and it doesn't.
Exactly, and I think it stays pretty much where you put it. I'm just really starting to use it. I used it some this season, and I like it pretty well. I think.
Yeah, I just started this season too. But folks, if you don't know what we're talking about, there's a new. Well, I don't know how new it is, but I think it's called Mojo Mud, and I think it's made here in Colorado. And it is. It's like a soft putty. It's not lead either. I don't think it's.
It isn't lead.
So it's safe for the environment and so forth, and you can just kind of rub it on your line and put as much or as little as you want. Make it real thin. And it's it's a lot easier than dealing with split shot, and I think you get less tangles too. But, let's talk about deeper water here, Eric. When we start getting 3 to 4 feet down, do you change any of your terminal tackle? Or are you pretty much using the same rig?
If I'm starting to fish deeper water, sometimes what I will do is that I alter my leader such that I'll use 10-pound fluorocarbon. I get a 100-yard spool of that. I will use that for my leader, and then I will put a loop on the end of that, and my nymphs come off of that loop. And that allows me to get deeper, and if I do break off and whatnot, it makes it easy to replace my tippet and my flies without having to worry too much about how far back I'm cutting my leader. So in deeper water, I tend to change my rig that way, and that seems to help me using that loop. This is probably not a real strong rig, but instead of going loop to loop, if I'm in a hurry, I just do a clinch knot with my tippet to the loop on that 10-pound fluorocarbon.
Okay.
Works for me. A little different sort of a rig.
Right, right. I'm not sure, this is Wayne Hayes in Austin, Texas. I'm not sure if he's talking about whether it's deeper water. I guess it's deeper water. How do you get the flies down in water column on a small, fast-moving stream? It refers to the Upper Taylor River in Colorado. And as I remember that, it's not a very wide river, but it's really deep there and kind of hard to get down. I think that's what he's talking about.
I tend when I'm fishing there, and by the way, Wayne, my graduation present from my folks when I graduated from the University of Colorado was a week fishing at Sepinero, which is where the Taylor River ran into the Gunnison River before Blue Mesa Reservoir was built. And wow, was that just wonderful fishing. And at that time, nobody cared about where you fished, even if it was controlled by private people, so you could pretty much fish all of the Taylor. But now there's that section on the top, and there's giant fish in there, and of course people like fishing that little tailwater up at the top. The only way to get down, I think, in that deeper water is I like to use weighted flies. I like to drop small, very small patterns off those weighted flies, and then I have to use some split shot or other weight as well to get into that deep water column. You want to make sure, though, that you're casting well above where you think the fish are. So that you, number one, so that you don't disturb them. But the other thing that I think people have trouble with is visualize your flies. Where that fly hits the water, obviously, with the current, it's going to take a while before it gets down in the fishing zone. Sometimes I play this game with myself. When is my fly actually fishing? And what that gives me feedback on is that I think I fished a piece of water that I haven't, because the flies have been sinking through that particular water before they get into the zone where they're actually working. And the deeper the water is, the closer to you that may be. And so you want to think in your mind, you know, when does that fly start to fish? I'm going to play that game. Where on this drift do I think my flies are fishing? And like I say, that's going to help you read that water, and it's going to help you get the fly to the fish. And it may be necessary with water like that to make longer casts upstream, and then work your line toward you. And then when you think that nymph is starting to fish, that's when you set yourself up so that you can detect a strike and so that you can react to that strike when you get it.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, because there's and I can't remember the run now, but down on the San Juan River in New Mexico, there was a run that's a deep run. It's up against the bank, and then there's a huge flat to the right of it. I think it's down by the campgrounds there on the lower section. Not the big lower section of the top section. And it was, you know,
you're talking that section above the Texas hole?
No, below to that Texas hole.
Okay.
Further down. And it was one that when you drift through there, you know, we'd always pick up fish in there all the time, you know. And then when I went to try to fish that from the flat that was next to it, you know, waiting, I had a heck of a time catching anything in there, and I attribute it to the fact that I couldn't get down deep enough and had enough time down deep to have any access to the fish.
Well, that's exactly right.
And when you're
right.
drifting with the boat, you can get it down deep and keep it deep as you go through.
Every year my son sets up a trip to the Bighorn River, and we were up there one day, and he said, "Dad, would you help this young man? This is his second trip up here that we've come, and he's never caught a fish," which I found hard to believe, but I said, "Well, sure, I'll help him." So I went and watched him fish, and we fished together for a while, and what I noted was that he didn't cast very far upstream, and then he would pick his flies up when they would come about level with him, and what was obviously happening is that the fly never got down to the bottom.
Right.
And all I needed to do was lengthen his cast about 3 or 4 feet and then make him leave those flies in there as they drifted down past him, and about the third cast he picked up a fish, and since then he doesn't have much trouble catching fish, but he was never letting the flies get to the fish. And
right.
so you want to pay attention to that.
Right. Okay, let's see what we've got here. We've got a lot more questions coming. I do have to take a little break here, and then we'll be right back. The Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. The Platte River Fly Shop provides a professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon Trophy, Gray Reef, and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or call Platte River Fly Shop at 1-307-237-5997. That's 1-307-237-5997. We're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Eric Patin about effective nymphing techniques for streams and rivers. If you'd like to ask Eric a question, just go to our website at askaboutflyfishing.com. Use that Q&A text box on the front page there to send us your question, and we'll try to get to as many of them as we can tonight. Well, Eric, we've got a couple of questions here. One, Bob Teeden, Smithfield, Rhode Island, wants to know, when you're nymphing, do you fish, and since you were just talking about this, fishing upstream or downstream?
I love to fish. To me, the sexiest way to fish a nymph is if I can get in the water and fish dead upstream. To me, that's the epitome. In fact, I call it dry fly nymphing simply because it's almost exactly the way I fish dry flies, is preferring to fish them upstream if I can. Now, if the water's pretty deep, then I do resort to fishing to the side of me out into the river. But if I can fish, if the water's shallow enough that I can fish dead upstream, that's my preference. It's easy then to set up my drift. I can see so much of my line and leader, and since I'm looking directly upstream, sometimes if the light's right, I even see the fish take the fly. And to me, that's just very exciting. There's a lot happening. There's a lot going on, and it's very quick fishing. People that don't fly fish think that there's something boring about it, like if you're sitting around at a lake waiting for a fish to take a worm, and it's just the opposite. You're just stumbling up the stream and seeing things and having a good time and smelling the smells of the river, and all of it is good. But fishing directly upstream to me is what I will always look for. That's why I like pocket water. I prefer fishing pocket water if I get the chance, because it's so much fun to do that.
Well, let's talk. We'll talk about that in a minute, because we have a couple of questions on that, and I saved that for the over 4 feet deep section. I don't know if that's appropriate or not, but we're almost there. We have a question from Gert Michaels in Belgium. He's talking about weight versus too much noise dropping the fly in the water. I fish a lot with beadhead flies, and have noticed that sometimes in relatively calm water, the fly makes much noise when it impacts the water and spooks the fish, but it's required to get deep enough. So it sounds like he's in some pretty quiet water there. Do you have any tips on that, on solving that situation?
Well, you just need to cast a little further above the fish than you normally might. And, you know, the fish are fairly used to things falling in the water and whatnot, so it won't disturb them, provided that you can cast far enough above them so that you're not dropping the weight right on top of them. Interesting, too, that two of the people that I know, Roman Mosier and Charles Jardine. Roman, I think, is Austrian, and Charles Jardine is from England. But they allow us how they don't think that weighted flies are as effective as unweighted flies. And I have to respectfully disagree with those two experts, and God knows they are experts, but they've used scuba gear to go down and watch the fish's reaction, and they feel like the fish react much better to an unweighted fly, and that may be, but the fact remains that we catch a lot of fish on weighted flies, and the bead heads are particularly effective, so I certainly would stick with those. But again, you know, try to use as little weight as you possibly can and still get the fly down to where the fish are, because you have to do that, whatever it takes.
Right, right.
But casting further above the fish will help.
Yeah, yeah, just stay away from them and bring the fly to them, right?
Bring the fly to them.
Yeah. We've got a question from Brian Wagner, Aztec, New Mexico, San Juan local, he says. Please touch on mending, its importance, and how to be sure you are mending properly.
Well, Brian, I grew up in Las Vegas, New Mexico, not very far away from you, and fished all the rivers that you probably fished. The San Juan at that time was not a trout stream, particularly until they built Navajo Dam, but the Pecos and the Gallinas and all those rivers up in there were where I learned to fly fish, really. But mending, I think, is particularly important, and you need to pay attention to that. Now, if you're fishing a little bit deeper water like you sometimes do on the San Juan, as soon as the flies hit the water and sink just a little bit, I like to throw what is really kind of an abbreviated roll cast, but a little tiny one, if you would, to get the line briefly up above the flies. I want to give the flies a chance to sink to the bottom before they're being drug along by that heavy diameter of that fly line. So as the nymphs start to sink through the water column, the line starts to pull on them. And if I can throw a mend immediately, first you got to let the fly sink a little bit, because if you throw that mend too quickly, it'll actually lift the flies out of the water. So you need to let them just sink a foot or so, and then throw that mend on top of them and let the fly sink. And then after that, you just mend as you think you need to, as you visualize, again, visualizing those flies underneath that water. If you think that your line is starting to pull those flies along, you want to try to reposition that line. And the secret is to keep practicing your mend until you can mend just the fly line without touching the leader. You can actually not disturb the leader of the flies and make a mend that just moves everything upstream a little bit. And practicing that is real important, I think, to letting those flies run along the bottom and not be jerking them this way or that way with an improper mend. But in most cases, you need to use mends to keep that line above those flies.
Okay. I just got Phil Panko in Minnesota again. He said, here's some extra information. We were talking about the Mojo Mud. He says there's another product that's called Tungsten Sticky Weight, 100% lead-free, soft like putty like the Mojo Mud you're talking about, and it stays pretty good and comes off just as easily. So there's another.
I'll have to find that. I haven't heard of that one.
He says Tungsten Sticky Weight, 100% lead-free. So I haven't seen that one either.
I'll look for that.
We had one here. Oh, and we kind of skipped over this, but this is an appropriate time to talk about this in this, 4 feet deep water is. What's your take on dry flies with nymph droppers, using a dry fly as an indicator, so to speak?
Absolutely, just a killer rig. When we're guiding, it is amazing how often we use that particular setup, and it is very, very, very effective. It's fun to fish. I would rather use a large floating fly than an indicator. It's a great way to suspend a nymph in water that's, 2 or 3 feet maybe is a stretch, but 1 to 2 feet is very effective. And as a pocket water rig, it's just unsurpassed. There's not too many rigs that you're going to fish that are going to be more effective. And it's fun to see. I had a day on the Pooter toward the end of the season where we'd had a pretty good hopper run. And the rainbow trout were taking the nymph, and brown trout were taking the dry. And it just, all day long, it was just that way. And why it was that the browns were preferring the floating fly, I don't know. But
no,
it's
I can't complain, though. Yeah.
No, and you don't want to ignore that rig because it's very, very effective.
Yeah. Here's a kind of a follow-up question on the fishing upstream. George Fitzhugh in Detroit. When fishing upstream, how would you set the hook when the line is in front of you?
Just exactly like you would with a dry fly. You have to be bringing that line in as it floats toward you. Just like I say, as you would with a dry fly, it's almost exactly the same sort of a fishing. So, or a technique of fishing. I will make that cast upstream, and as soon as the line starts to float toward me, I start bringing that line in and creating a loop so that I have pretty good connect to that. It takes one back cast to put that line right back out there too. I don't like a lot of false casting. Not that you can do false casting with a nymph rig very effectively, but anytime the fly's out of the water, you're out of the game, and anytime the fly's in the water, you're back in the game. So I like to keep that rig in the water as much as I can. But I just bring the line in as it floats back toward me so that as soon as I see something that I think is a strike, I can react to it.
Well, you have to, when you're doing that, you have to work a lot harder, basically, than doing a cast out into the stream and letting it float down, because you have to bring that line in and keep control of that line quickly, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And don't forget that even though sometimes you don't do that, you've gotten lazy and the flies are floating back toward you and your rig's floating back toward you, and now you've left a bunch of line on the water, you get a strike like that, just throw a quick upstream loop. It just needs that little jerk on the end of the line to set the hook. So that's one way to do it. Just
make
them an upstream end with your line. Just flick it upstream, and that'll move that line enough to hook that fish.
That's a lot faster than trying to gather it up, that's for sure. Yeah,
you won't gather it up. You'll be too late.
Yeah. Here's a question from Don in Denver. Asked about, what's your thoughts on the Czech Polish nymphing techniques? Do you ever use these on Colorado streams?
I've seen them used, and they're effective. They have their own flies. They have their own ways of fishing those heavily weighted flies, and they're very effective. On the other hand, I guess I would say that the question is not so much what will catch a trout as what won't catch a trout, depending on the circumstances. I mean, lots of techniques, it falls right back into the idea that there's no wrong way to do it.
Yeah, and with the Czech Polish nymphing, basically they're using heavily weighted flies.
Very heavily weighted flies.
Yeah, kind of high sticking.
I was watching a young man that works for Umpqua Feather Merchants, Brady Henson. He was using that technique on the Encampment River this summer, and I was watching him, and I looked at the flies, and I was totally unimpressed, but then he took three or four fish right in the run. I was watching him fish right in front of my face as soon as we started out. And so I had to readjust my thinking about how effective that might be. But with those heavily weighted flies, they get down quick.
And that's half the battle, right?
That's half the battle. Very effective.
Well, let's talk a little bit about pools. We've got a couple of questions. Let's see. Mike Reeves in Morristown, Tennessee. I fish in the Appalachian Mountains where there are many deep plunge pools. I know there are good fish sitting on the bottom or near the bottom. How would you fish this type of water? And you just mentioned a minute ago that you like fishing those.
Well, I think when you have deep plunge pools like that, there's no tougher water to get the nymph down in, because almost immediately everything wants to pull that rig out of that spot. And so that's a place where I would use maybe just a little bit longer leader, depending on how deep those plunge pools are. And the reason why the deeper the water is, the more I'm inclined to not use any sort of a sink tip line, because you can't let the fly sink before the line is starting to pull it out of the pocket. But that's exactly where I'd use that little technique of throwing a roll cast. As soon as those flies hit that spot, and you want to get them as tied up into that plunge pool as you possibly can, and then throw a roll cast right on top of it. And that gives you that little extra time, those extra two or three seconds to let those flies sink right into that pocket before the rest of your rig is starting to, the water's pulling everything out of there. And it can work. It can work. You need to use fairly heavily weighted flies. For that kind of fishing, I do like fairly heavily weighted flies.
Yeah, we have another kind of follow-up question on that. Mike Oslowski in Santa Cruz, California, says, what is the best way to set the depth for a nymph, especially when you don't know how deep a pool is? So, and
you just
I
keep putting on weight until you touch the bottom, and once you touch the bottom, then you know you're in the zone. But again, I would reiterate that you don't want to be hanging up all the time. You want to just be kissing the bottom occasionally. And it's just, if you don't know the depth of the water, it really is just a game of just adding weight until you think you're there, or until you're
right.
pretty sure that you're there, and then fish that. But you're going to be needing to adjust your weight fairly frequently, and if you're willing to not get lazy about that, you'll find that it's a lot more effective.
There's a question here. We're talking, most of these questions are for, you know, over 4 feet deep now. We're talking Andrew Stauffer in Pennsylvania. He says, for high sticking and tight lining at relatively close range, I too prefer no indicator. However, when on big water and nymphing in a long, deep run requiring 40 or 60-foot casts, I find an indicator essential. Is there a better or different way?
No.
There's your answer.
there isn't a better way, and I think that that's one of those occasions when an indicator is a godsend, because there isn't a better way to do it. There's no other way to do it really effectively.
Yeah. Let's see here. Swanson River. Do you know where the Swanson River system is?
I don't. There's
okay.
a Swanson River system in Saskatchewan, but I'm sure that's not the one he's talking about.
Yeah, Gene in Denver wants to know, is there any way to nymph around a wall of lily pads? And I don't really think we have any place like that in Colorado. I don't know where the Swanson River system is. But,
I don't either, but I have fished water that is similar to that, and I will tell you that that is very difficult and very technical sort of fishing, and is usually beyond me. That's where I am usually going to get skunked. If I'm going to get skunked, is in a place like that. I just usually can't figure it out. It's just too hard.
Yeah, yeah. Go with a dry fly, right?
Go with a dry fly. That's
a bat or a bass bug or something there. Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit about flies, because we did get some questions in here on flies. Pete in southeastern Pennsylvania. Can you tell us what the most important characteristics of a nymph fly are, thinking color, size, motion, as well as any order of importance these may have?
Well, I definitely have a feel for that, because, first of all, I think that there's a good reason why, with all of the wonderful synthetics that we have and whatnot, that there's still fur and feather is still the mainstay of most of our flies. And the reason for that, I think, is motion in the water. I think that when I'm trying to think like a fish, you got to remember that, you know, I have eyes and so does a fish. I can hear and so does a fish. I need to breathe oxygen and so does a fish, though they get their oxygen from water. I get mine out of the air. But what I'm getting at is that we're more alike than different. And so when I'm elk hunting or something, the first thing that I notice is motion someplace. Something moves that catches my eye. And I think that that is key and most important. That's why a little bit of flash, a little bit of color in a fly, the first thing I have to overcome, I have to get the fish to see the fly. That's number one. And so motion, or something that not only catches their eye, but indicates to the fish that it's something that's alive. There's movement to it. It's not just dead. I think that second is shade matters a little bit. If there's a little sparkle in that shade, that helps. I think that probably size is not so critical. A lot of the insects in the water are at different stages in their development, and so a little bit of variation is probably not going to put the fish off. But I think absolutely motion, or what indicates to the fish that not only do they see it, but they see something that they think is alive and is food to them, is key.
Okay, we've got a couple, and these always come up on every show. Ken Calhoun in Gilmer, Texas, wants to know, if you could only fish four nymph patterns, what would they be? And then we have another one that Mike Wolf in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, if you could only carry five nymph patterns, what would it be? So they want your go-to flies there, Eric.
Well, my go-to flies, I'd have to tell you, you sent me to my fishing tackle because I had to go look at my fly boxes to kind of decide, because I use a lot of patterns, not tons, but I use a lot. I think if I could only have four nymphs, and I'm not going to necessarily say this is in the order of importance, for sure it would be a hare's ear size 14 through 18. I think for sure I'd be using John Barr's Copper John in the copper. A size 16 would be my choice. I like the Partridge and Orange soft tackle, and I would use that in a 14 or 16. Flashback pheasant tail would be a very effective pattern for me. And I think that, what's interesting to me is that there's a reason why your favorite patterns work. Your first five favorite patterns, you'll take the temperature of the water, you'll look at this, you'll look at that, air temperature and whatnot, and you'll seine some nymphs, and then you'll put on the flies that you usually fish. And the reason why your first five patterns are so effective compared to, say, your second five patterns is that the second five never get to play. They're the substitutes. They never get to play unless you're so far ahead or so far behind that it doesn't matter anymore. And so I think, though, that truly it's very, very important that you have confidence in the patterns that you're fishing. If you don't think they're going to catch fish, it's just weird. You don't catch fish with them. And a straight pheasant tail, I can't catch fish with a straight pheasant tail. It's one of the most effective nymph patterns in the whole world, and yet I can't catch fish with it. And it just, the minute I put it on, I must change something I do because it just won't be effective for me. Now, if I use a flashback, then all of a sudden I'm in the game again. But you need to fish the patterns that you like. And if you tie, you need to tie them the way you think they should look. And they'll be very effective for you. But if I just had four or five patterns, and by the way, I would use and have used these same patterns in the UK and in New Zealand and in Chile, and they're just universally very effective for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eric, we're going to have to wind things up here. We're getting short on time.
Okay.
So I want to end. We do have people, as we found out, all the way from New Zealand and Belgium, and then we had a question, Shane Gallagher in Ireland. Says, do you ever think of coming to Ireland, Eric, to fish? And you've been to Ireland, haven't you?
Shane, I have fished tributaries of the River Suir in Ireland. Ireland is absolutely fantastic. It's got these beautiful little streams that would just break your heart to fish. I mean, they are so beautiful, it's beyond belief. A real quick little story. I hired a guide when I first went down there at the little town of Bella Macabra, and I pulled up to the house I was supposed to meet him at, and here was a young man tying a fly in front of this picture window. And without knocking on the door, I went in, and I gently pushed him from the chair, and I sat down and finished the fly he was tying. This young man was Andrew Ryan, who's become a notable fisherman in Ireland and is a bit older now, but he and I spent a delightful day talking about his rivers and whatnot, and fishing nymphs, as a matter of fact, some of these same nymphs very effectively. But it is a beautiful, beautiful place, and anybody that's not thought of fishing Ireland should certainly consider it, because it is gorgeous.
Well, all the pictures you see over there are just incredible.
It's even prettier than they show in pictures.
It always is, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to move on and close things up here, Eric, but stick with me, and we're going to give away that three-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and also the subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, and also that gift certificate, too. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. Keeney's Fly Shop is an extensive inventory and fly tying department and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call Keeney's at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. Well, just a quick reminder to everybody, before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You'll find a link on our homepage in the section right under Eric that says, what did you think of the show? Just click there, leave a few comments. We'd love to hear them. Well, now it's time to give away the prizes that we have tonight, and let's just see who these winners are going to be. Now, for the first two, you would have had to register it ahead of time on the site tonight, and I press my magic button, which goes through and pulls these from our database of those that registered. And so I'm going to pick the first winner here for the three-year membership of for the Federation of Fly Fishers, and that person is Mike Sousa, or Sosa, and Mike is in New Hampshire. So congratulations, Mike.
Congratulations.
If you don't have a membership, you'll enjoy this. If you do, we'll get it extended for you, and that's always a great gift. Okay, Fly Fusion magazine out of Calgary, Canada, great magazine, wonderful pictures. We have a one-year subscription for that, and the winner is Tim Griffith in California. Tim Griffith, so congratulations, Tim, and you will enjoy that magazine. It's a great magazine, some great people running that publishing firm up there. Okay, we need to find a question here for the $20 gift certificate for Front Range Anglers in Boulder, and you can get this, you can redeem this at their shop, or you can do it online. Let's see, we'll make this easy. If you had a long cast in deep water, would Eric suggest you use a strike indicator or not use a strike indicator? Okay, so a long cast out into a deep run, should you use an indicator or not use an indicator in that situation? So type that answer in that text box on the homepage. Be sure to put your name and your location, otherwise you won't qualify. And we'll see who the first winner is. And still picking up questions. Okay, it looks like Roy Moyer, Campbell River, B.C., says a strike indicator. And is that the correct answer there, Eric?
That's absolutely right. You live in a beautiful place up at Campbell River.
Yeah, he sure does. So, Roy, you won the $20 gift certificate. It'll be kind of hard unless you're coming to Denver Boulder to redeem that, but you can do it online on their website. And, Roy, I will encourage you to send me your email address. You can either do it in that text box right there or send it to info@askaboutflyfishing.com so that I can get your email address so I can communicate with you to get your mailing address and so forth. So please do that for me. Well, congratulations, all our winners tonight, and had some great prizes to give away tonight, which is always fun, and enjoy. Well, Eric, I really appreciate you being on the show with us. I know we've been trying to do this for a long time, and we finally got it done, and we got through most of the questions, but there were still some unanswered ones, but we'll have to leave that for next time.
Yes, it was great fun.
Good questions.
Very good questions.
Yeah, and I want to really thank the audience tonight, because this is probably, we've probably had more questions tonight on this show than we've ever had, so we really had great participation. Yeah, great. And that's what makes this really interesting, so we do appreciate it. And if we didn't get to your question, I'm sorry, but I tried to combine some of them and answer as many of them as we can, and we did our best, anyway. Well, our next broadcast will be on January 2nd at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern. And on that show, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. We're going to be interviewing Brian Whiting. And the topic for the show will be planning the fly fishing trip of your lifetime. Brian is a high school teacher in Colorado and had dreamed of fishing in Alaska with his two boys. Actually going, however, it seemed beyond possible. How do you make the time? Where do I specifically go? When do I go? What do I ask about lodges, camps, or guides, and how do I make sure I don't get ripped off? What equipment do I need, and so forth? Well, Brian will share his experience. He did a lot of research before he took his two boys up to Alaska and found out what it takes to really plan a trip and ask those right questions. So we're going to be talking to Brian about experience with that, and you'll get a lot of good tips on planning a trip that may be only a once-in-a-lifetime trip for you. We would like to thank ISC, the International Sportsmen's Expositions, AFTA, the American Fly Fishing Trade Association, Federation of Fly Fishers, Platte River Fly Shop, and Keeney's Fly Shop for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. and feel free to explore the other areas of our site, like the events calendar and the directories. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.